Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Tracy B. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry. Welcome to the podcast.
So in our previous episode, we talked about the Great Emu War, and something came up in that episode, which comes up pretty often if you are reading about Australia, particularly if you are reading about the state of Western Australia. It's the rabbit-proof fence.
Which I had known nothing about before we got into that one.
No, I feel like it keeps coming up when I'm reading things about Australia. There's also a film I have seen called Rabbit-Proof Fence. That came out in 2002. It's about some young girls who were part of the stolen generation of the 30s who follow the rabbit-proof fence home to get back to where they came from in Gigalong. It's based on the book Followed the Rabbit-Proof Fence, and the score in the film is by Peter Gabriel. I like it quite a lot.
I have not seen the film, but I will make a point to you.
Yes, it is it's a little slight digression, but every time this rabbit-proof fence comes up, I go, okay, obviously, there are lots of rabbits in Australia. Somebody put up a big fence. What's really going on with this fence? And so that's what we're going to talk about in this episode.
Yeah. And first we have to kind of start with how rabbits got introduced.
Right.
To the environment. And the earliest European settlers to Australia, as most people know, were convicts and their keepers. But by the mid-1800s, more affluent English people were starting to settle there as well.
A lot of them brought animals and plants from home with them to try to make Australia feel more like England. These people were known as acclimatizers. There were acclimatization societies, including the Victorian Acclimatization Society, which was founded in 1861 by Edward Wilson. So really what they were after was to try to make Australia, which does not feel like England in most places, feel more like England.
Yeah. It was their own weird version of terraforming.
Right.
To try to turn it somehow into an English countryside.
In a lot of ways, this was deeply unsuccessful and damaging, with this being one example. Enter Thomas Austin. He was born in Somerset, England, and his uncle James was a convict settler who had been sent to Hobart Town, Tasmania. James Austin died before Thomas and his family got to Tasmania in 1831, but they all got money in his will.
And many of the family actually returned to England, but Thomas and his brother decided, whose name was James, decided that they were going to stay down under and make a go of it.
In 1837, Thomas and James moved to what would later become Victoria. Thomas established the estate of Barwon Park, which was a 42-room mansion eventually. He didn't build that right off the bat, but eventually there was a 42-room mansion there. It was surrounded by 29,000 acres of stocked grounds. He farmed sheep and raised and trained horses, among other things, on all of this land. And he also really wanted some rabbits.
And he had married Elizabeth Phillips Harding in Melbourne on August 14th of 1845. And together they had 11 children, 8 of whom survived to adulthood. And he also is one of the people who introduced sparrows to Australia, which also later became pests.
Yes. So here we have Thomas, his family, his wife, living on this estate together, really wanting to introduce rabbits. There was a demand. They weren't the only people who were of this mindset. There was a demand for rabbits in Australia. Early acclimatizers had brought domesticated rabbits, which did okay when people were looking after them. But if they managed to escape into the Australian wilderness, they usually did not manage to survive really well. Sometimes they would manage to establish a little colony, get kind of a foothold, but they didn't run rampant anywhere. They did a little better in Tasmania and some of the other smaller islands around the main Australian continent. But in general, domesticated rabbits were not doing so well.
No. And Thomas actually asked his nephew, William Mack, to bring him some wild rabbits in an effort to kind of bolster the population. And William brought 24 rabbits on the Clipper Lightning in December of 1859. 18 of those rabbits were feral, and they had just been trapped and held in an enclosed warren. They weren't domesticated. They weren't accustomed to interacting with humans at all.
Thomas, in an act he became quite notorious for doing, set 13 of the rabbits free. He kept 11 of them in fenced enclosures on his property, and they multiplied, as rabbits do. 3 years later, a flood destroyed part of his fence, and so some of those now huge population of rabbits escaped into the Australian territory.
Which caused an explosion of rabbit population.
Yes. By 1867, rabbits were really everywhere, and Thomas would have rabbit hunting parties at his estate. Prince Alfred, the Duke of Edinburgh, went on a hunting day in Barwon Park that year, and he shot 416 rabbits in 3.5 hours. He reportedly had to have attendants on hand to hand him new guns when the one he was using got too hot, because he was shooting too fast for his guns to cool down between shots.
By 1869, the infestation of rabbits was causing property values in some areas to plummet. And the rabbits themselves, we should point out, were not the only ones to blame. Farmers were actually clearing woodland and making it a much more hospitable environment for the rabbits to thrive in.
Their introduction was in Victoria on the coast in the far southeast of Australia, and they spread north and west from there. By the 1880s, the government had started offering bounties on dead rabbits because there were so many of them. And by 1900, rabbits were in all or part of every Australian state. They were the biggest nuisance outside of the tropical areas. And so this was less than 40 years after they were introduced to Australia. They were in every state of Australia. It's a big continent.
It is. That's a pretty explosive population growth for any animal. In less than 4 decades to completely engulf a continent is pretty amazing.
Right. The rabbits became prey for other introduced species like wild cats, wild dogs, foxes, and dingoes. All of these except for dingoes were introduced after the landing of the First Fleet, which was the 11 ships that reached Australia from Great Britain in 1788. A lot of people think of dingoes as being native to Australia. But they really arrived to Australia when humans did, about 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. So whether to call dingoes native is a subject of debate.
Yeah. And in addition to the basic nuisance factor that was going on and the fact that the rabbits were crowding out native species, they could also completely strip an area of anything they would eat. That includes food crops that were intended for people, as well as crops that were intended to support the raising of other animals. So this also led not only to things going without food, but also really bad erosion issues.
Right. You can find pictures sometimes of really well-maintained rabbit fences. And on one side of the fence will be completely stripped of all vegetation. And on the other side, there will be healthy grass growing. So it's a dramatic difference of rabbits versus no rabbits.
They're extremely thorough in finding every consumable element in an environment.
Yes.
And then the great idea happened to build a fence to help with this problem.
Yeah. By the 1880s, people were building fences on their own in an attempt to keep rabbits out of their property. Often this was not effective at all because there were already rabbits on both sides of the fence. And also rabbits like to burrow under things. And so even if there had not been rabbits on both sides of the fence, the rabbits would just dig a hole underneath and come up on the other side.
So eventually, construction was begun on what became the state barrier fence. And that happened from 1901 to 1907. And this followed a 5-month investigation by Arthur Mason, which started in 1896, and a royal commission in 1901. So private contractors did the work on the state barrier fence and then handed it over to the Public Works Department in 1904.
The fence itself, when it was originally being built, was made of wooden posts, wire, and wire netting, with gates every 34 kilometers, which is about 20 miles, and traps to try to catch rabbits that did manage to burrow under it. Usually the crews were cutting timber from the surrounding trees to make the posts, and if there weren't any trees, they would use metal posts instead. The netting for the fence also extends underground to try to prevent burrowing from underneath it.
Yeah.
And they would coat the bottom part of the fence in the hope of keeping it from rusting out.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Mm-hmm. Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing. And no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
So the number one fence runs from north to south, roughly through the middle of Western Australia. The number three fence stretches out east to west about midway down the number one fence. And the number two fence stretches north to south, dividing the zone created by the number one and number three fences roughly in half.
Yes. So basically there's a fence running the entire height of Australia from north to south all the way down. The reason that there are three of them is because as they were building, rabbits kept getting ahead of the fence. And so they were sort of further subdividing to try to keep the rabbits contained. What they wound up with was 3,256 kilometers, which is 2,023 miles of fence, which cost more than 300,000 pounds at the time. Like we said in the last episode, Australia was not on the dollar for money at the time. So it's a little hard to compare what that would amount to in today's money.
And the fences fell under the jurisdiction of, I love this title, the first chief inspector of rabbits, whose name was Alexander Crawford. At their completion in 1907, he took over as chief inspector of rabbits, which is just the best thing to put on
the best
a business
title.
Card of all time.
Right. Just building the fence was not enough. They were going to then have to inspect the fence constantly to make sure that it didn't get damaged or burrowed under. People would travel the length of the fence using bicycles, horses, and camels to look for breaches. And there were huts set up periodically along the way that people could stay in while they were doing this inspection. Once motor vehicles became more common, people did start using them to inspect the fence. But really, in the beginning, it was bicycles, horses, camels, or on foot, which is a lot of fence to try to just inspect.
It is. And there were not always areas that motor vehicles could even reach. So they had to retain some of those slower methods for the those areas that just couldn't be arrived at by car.
Right.
And there were other anti-rabbit fences constructed elsewhere in Australia. These three were not the only ones.
No, there's the dog fence, which goes, it's very meandering, but it's in a roughly east-west direction through South Australia, then along the South Australia-Queensland-New South Wales border, through Queensland and almost to the coast. It keeps dingoes on one side of the fence, and was put up when dingo attacks were happening so frequently that it had become basically impossible to raise sheep. Also, in addition to there being multiple other sort of vermin-excluding fences is the broad category they fall into, the state barrier fence also deters other animals than rabbits, such as emus, as we talked about in the previous episode.
Now, the thing is that all of these fences remain a little controversial as to whether or not they really work, whether their impact on the biodiversity of the areas outweighs the benefit of containing vermin. And so it's while they are doing their jobs in many cases, some people question their validity as a maintained entity. Like, are we wasting our time and money on this?
Right.
But the Department of Agriculture and Food in 2001 decided that the fence was would now be maintained by the Department of Agriculture, the Agriculture Protection Board, the State Barrier Fence Advisory Committee, local shires, and stakeholders. So roughly every year the fence is has about 30 to 35 kilometers that need replacing. And new sections have steel posts and more modern prefabricated netting.
Right. So it's a fence that's still there, still being maintained, still attempting to do the job of keeping rabbits on one side and not on the other side, or at least fewer rabbits on one side than on the other side. And rabbits are still a nuisance. Right now, there's a similarly controversial attempt to introduce diseases into rabbit populations to try to curb their spread. And there are lots of layers of the reasons why that can be problematic or upsetting to some people. But that is one of the things that's being done in an attempt to keep the rabbit population from completely overrunning the rest of Australia.
So one important legacy to look at is that of the man who brought rabbits to Australia.
Thomas really started to take the blame for the rabbit infestation pretty early on. He was probably not the only person to bring rabbits that eventually did multiply. That's sort of unlikely. But he was really boastful about what he was doing. He frequently gave breeding pairs to people as gifts. So while it's probably not true that the entire population of rabbits in Australia now is the fault of this one guy, he's
kind of taking the hit.
He bragged about his rabbits a lot, and he made a name for himself that way. He died on December 15th, 1871, which was 6 months after their mansion was finished. His widow eventually used her money to open a hospital for what they called incurables in 1882, and she opened a children's ward in 1898. So they went on to have kind of a legacy in Australia, apart from bringing rabbits to destroy us all.
The negative rabbit image is not the only thing that his family left behind, which is good.
Yeah. And it's also good to recognize that while he's getting all the flack, probably there were many other rabbit people who just did not make quite the name for themselves that he did.
Yeah, he was not the only person that wanted to turn Australia into England.
No.
So it's very likely that plenty of other people were bringing in rabbits as well as other species.
Right. And that's a thing that you'll see in other English colonies, an attempt to make other places that are absolutely not England
more like England.
It's sort of a colonial tradition and is absolutely problematic, but is a thing that definitely contributed in a long-lasting way to a lot of parts of the world, for good or for ill. And that's the story of the rabbit fence.
Now we know.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road trip or waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
You also have some listener mail for
us. I do. Today's listener mail is a listener postcard. It shows on the front a very lovely picture of a coastline, like a hilly coastline with a village at the bottom of it. It is the village of Actowan, which is a native Alaskan village in the Aleutian Islands. Less than 100 people live there. Written on the postcard. Less than 100 people live there, along with a fish processing plant. Sarah, who wrote this to us, says, I travel to remote Alaskan villages such as Actowan by float plane, small planes, and boats to do eye exams. I work in the public health service, so it keeps us very busy traveling to the villages with all of the eye equipment, 300 pounds, and doing eye exams. I always bring you with me to put on speaker during my hikes to keep the bears away. That's the best use of our podcast I've heard, I think. I love hearing about people who are using the podcast to sort of do tasks that they don't like to do, but scaring bears away is a new and awesome
That's
one.
Spectacular.
So to return to Sarah's postcard, thanks for keeping me entertained and safe. More Native American and Alaskan stories would be great. Sarah, thank you so much, Sarah, for this postcard. I love
Very
hearing
cool.
about your hiking and your bears and your eye exams.
Stay safe.
Yes, please do. If you would like to write to us, you may at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff and on Twitter at Missed in History. We've just started up a Tumblr, which is missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Pinterest. It's everywhere. If you would like to learn more about what we have talked about today, go to our website and type in the word invasive species in the search bar, and you will find 5 invasive species that might conquer the world. Spoiler, one of them is rabbits. You can learn about all that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This episode of Stuff You Missed in History Class is brought to you by JackThreads.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.